It is Tuesday, November 12, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, art for you and possibly art by you. Antoinette will talk to the artistic eye behind a new exhibit of photographs exploring street art in Beirut. And I'll take a quick tour of the Community Creative Center, where everybody and anybody is encouraged to make art.
And in about 7 minutes on Ozarks, research into the water quality of Beaver Lake by scientists at the University of Arkansas.
First, though Arkansas-based Heifer International doesn't have any Arkansans on the ground in the Philippines, the organization is making adjustments to its project operations in the country following the aftermath of a deadly typhoon. Allison Stevens is a spokesperson at the organization's Little Rock headquarters.
We've deployed a team from the north that was not affected by the typhoon to travel to the central region to do project assessments and try to get tighter communications or make communications or direct communication with our farmers. We were going to also send a team from the southern region, but because of a tropical depression that is happening, they've been delayed in that transportation.
Although damage assessments are ongoing, officials with Heifer International anticipate project participants have suffered significant loss of property, including houses and livestock. While severe weather does have an impact on the group's projects in developing countries, Stephen says the Heifer staff realizes the group works in environmentally sensitive areas. She also says in the past few years, the group has developed a community disaster risk reduction plan.
It's an integral part of the training that our families receive. And really what it does is it starts to highlight that when disaster strikes, the best thing that communities can do is look out for each other, help each other secure their property, help them secure important documents, and then really use what is the buddy system to then, once the storm passes, check on each other, band together, share resources. And we found that from Typhoon Bopha, which hit the Philippines in December of last year, that disaster reduction training was very helpful in helping our families start their rehabilitation earlier.
Stephen says Heifer officials expect to have damage assessments complete by the week's end, at which point the organization can make adjustments to its efforts in the Philippines in the short and long-term time frames.
The city of Bentonville recently received a grant from the Endeavor Foundation to help expand pedestrian infrastructure in the city. Troy Galloway, the city's director of community development, says the grant from the foundation, which will be formally accepted by the city council tonight, will give more than $70,000 to the project.
We're going to couple that money with some community development block grant funding that the city gets on an annual basis to construct sidewalks on both sides of Southeast 6th Street, from Main Street running eastward to the vicinity of F or G Street. And really that takes us from downtown Bentonville to the city's newest park, which is Austin Baggett Park, which is a little neighborhood park that's in the southeast part of downtown Bentonville.
Galloway says the sidewalk project is crucial to expanding the walkable infrastructure in that part of town.
Well, when you look at the southeast part of downtown Bentonville, there are very few sidewalks. So there is a trail that runs east to west through this neighborhood, but the shortcoming is there's not a good network of sidewalks to get people to and from downtown and to the trail network. So this particular sidewalk will help to begin to build some of that sidewalk infrastructure necessary to make those areas more pedestrian-friendly for the folks that live there.
Galloway says without the grant from the Endeavor Foundation, which will cover about three-quarters of the sidewalk construction cost, the project would not be moving forward at this time.
While this has turned out to be a record-breaking year for the volume of corn grown in Arkansas, corn prices are down sharply. The state averaged 182 bushels per acre this year. Jason Kelly, an agronomist with the University of Arkansas's Division of Agriculture, says prices a year ago, though, were near $8 a bushel. This year, he says they're below $5, and he says that will have growers struggling.
I think that for that now and this coming year, producers will probably be a little more stingy with the money they spend on the crop. We're looking at hopefully we could get close to $5 a bushel for 2014, and may not get there. So I think from this coming year, producers are going to have good yields to be able to break even.
Kelly says while cool, wet weather delayed the planting of corn, he says conditions the rest of the year were ideal, leading to the record harvest.
Polls are open today in Fayetteville. Voters are being asked three questions on the ballot. One, to pay off existing bonds used to fund construction of the Fayetteville Town Center. Two, to fund up to $6.9 million of the expansion of the Walton Arts Center's Fayetteville campus. And three, to fund up to $3.5 million of development of the Regional Park Project off of Cato Springs Road. In effect, voters are being asked to extend the current hotel, motel, and restaurant tax instead of being asked to enact a new tax. Polls are open until 7:30 this evening, and to find your polling location, you can visit voterview.org.
Poultry giant Cargill is making a commitment to donate more than 11,000 turkeys to food banks, the Salvation Army, and other charitable organizations this holiday season. According to thecitywire.com, the turkeys are worth more than $200,000. The 11,000 turkeys are in addition to the regular annual turkey donations the company gives to charitable organizations in areas near its turkey processing facilities across the country and near its corporate headquarters in Wichita and Minneapolis. In Arkansas, the turkeys will be distributed by the food banks in Bethel Heights and Little Rock, and the Regional Food Bank of Oklahoma will receive turkeys for victims of this year's spring tornadoes in Moore, Oklahoma.
The Arkansas soccer team is heading to the NCAA tournament for the first time in the program's 28-year history. Arkansas, 13-8 on the season, will meet Oklahoma State Friday in the first round of the 64-team bracket. The match is scheduled to start at 7 o'clock Friday night in Stillwater, Oklahoma. OSU enters the tournament with a 9-6-6 record. Meanwhile, the John Brown University women's soccer team will host Wayland Baptist this afternoon at 2 in a semifinal match in the Sooner Athletic Conference tournament.
Tonight, clear. Lows will be around 15 in northwest Arkansas, 23 for the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, sunny. Highs from 47 to 51 across the region. And tomorrow night, clear with lows from 23 to 27. This is Ozarks at Large. A new study conducted by University of Arkansas water research scientists indicates Beaver Lake may be warming and changing, possibly due to climate change. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
In 2013, the Arkansas Water Resources Center in Fayetteville funded five research projects. One of them proposed by Drs. Byron Winston and his colleague Thad Scott, an assistant professor in the Crop, Soil, and Environmental Sciences Department at the University of Arkansas, looks at how climate change is affecting Beaver Reservoir. Thad Scott is a limnologist or lake scientist who studies biological and chemical influences on water resources.
The water quality conditions in the lake are really good. If you're in the lake and you're just looking at the water clarity and you're up in the river section, it looks murky. But if you're down by the dam, you can see down 50, 100 feet maybe.
Beaver Lake is not a natural lake, but a 44-square-mile impoundment constructed in the 1960s as both a recreational and drinking water resource. The lake became increasingly polluted, primarily from poultry farm nutrient waste runoff, in this case primarily phosphorus, fed to birds to boost growth. It also fed eutrophication of the lake, algae blooms. But thanks to tighter environmental regulation, water quality is improved. But now climate change poses a new threat.
Well, we do have a record that says the lake is warming. Beaver Water District has been collecting temperature data for over 30 years, and their record does indicate some warming in the lake that looks statistically significant. But the project we've been working on is not necessarily about warming per se. It's more to do with what's causing the warming on a global basis, and that's the increasing concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
Carbon dioxide, or CO2, wafting from coal, natural gas, gasoline cars, and oil combustion accounts for 84% of all greenhouse gas emissions in the United States. Between 20 to 50% of carbon dioxide stays in the atmosphere, the rest absorbed by the biosphere, plants and soils, and hydrosphere, lakes and oceans.
The effect that CO2 can have on water bodies is sort of water body dependent, and that's because how carbon dioxide dissolves in water is dependent upon temperature, solute concentrations in the water, like how saline the water is, and a variety of other factors. CO2 concentrations are often also influenced by the type of watershed. So, for instance, really natural lakes in northern landscapes have a lot of forest around them, and those lakes are very, very rich in CO2 already because they of the natural processes which are decomposing organic matter in those lakes and putting the CO2 in the lakes. Our water bodies here in Northwest Arkansas are a lot different because they're man-made lakes, so they don't have that buildup of organic matter like the natural lakes do. And also in Northwest Arkansas and in the Ozarks in particular, our lakes tend to be not very alkaline compared to many places throughout the country. So that means that our water isn't very buffered to changes in carbon dioxide.
Like Alka-Seltzer, alkaline lakes buffer excess acid produced by carbon dioxide. And as lakes have warmed, algae blooms have occurred, including toxic blue-green algae cyanobacterial outbreaks in eastern Oklahoma lakes. And too much biomass also steals dissolved oxygen from water, resulting in eutrophication.
Well, we don't know that we have more phytoplankton in Beaver Lake because of global climate change. However, our preliminary work is indicating that it's possible that we may. What really the work so far that we've done has showed is that the lake will be more susceptible to nutrient-driven eutrophication. So in the past, we all know that the more nutrients that enter the lake, the greener the lakes get, and that has implications for water quality. Today, under today's environment, it takes a certain amount of phosphorus to make the lake green. What our research is beginning to show is that in the future, it will take less phosphorus to make the lake just as green because of the increased carbon dioxide concentrations in the lake.
Both Carroll Boone Water District, which operates near Beaver Dam, and Beaver Water District, located in Lowell, uptake, filter, and disinfect drinking water from the reservoir, and disinfection yields certain treatment byproducts. EPA sets a limit of 80 parts per billion for one set of compounds, trihalomethanes, because they convey a slight risk of cancer over the long term. Now, the average trihalomethane level at Carroll Boone Water District, which uses chloramine, was 48 parts per billion, while Beaver Water District, which uses chlorine, was nearly 64 parts per billion, last count. So if climate change causes more junk to grow in the water, will more disinfection be needed?
Well, certainly we know that the more organic matter in the water, the more phytoplankton biomass, the greater the risk for trihalomethane production associated with water treatment.
Removing trihalomethane compounds can be done through activated carbon filters, ozonation, or advanced oxidation, all of which is too expensive for water districts. Julian Ferry, a professor of civil engineering at the University of Arkansas, is working with Thad Scott on municipal water quality research. He specializes in disinfection byproduct formation and control.
The nitrogen and phosphorus that's being added to waters and causing algae to grow, they don't seem to be causing more formation of trihalomethanes, but they do seem to be decreasing the effectiveness of the treatment measures, chlorine dioxide and alum coagulation, that are used at Beaver Water District.
Both legal and legislative pressure have resulted in decreased nutrients in Beaver Reservoir from golf courses, wastewater treatment systems, and farms. But every autumn, the reservoir stratifies or churns up muck due to temperature inversion, causing taste and odor problems, traced to another compound known as methyl isoborneol. So could climate change also exacerbate that, Thad Scott?
Most likely, particularly if we see increasing temperatures manifesting themselves in the surface water temperature of the lake, what will likely happen is we'll have a longer stratification duration, or maybe the strength of stratification will become stronger and stronger. And those certainly have implications for the way the lake functions biologically and chemically.
Climate change is also affecting our oceans. A study published in the journal Science made big news this autumn regarding the middle depths of the Pacific warming 15 times faster since 1970 compared to the previous 10,000 years. According to NASA, the excess carbon dioxide is creating more carbonic acid, resulting in a more acidic ocean. And Thad Scott says that threatens aquatic life.
Yeah, so the major implication of that is for corals, which require calcium carbonate to generate their shells, basically the solid material that they eventually make. And what's happening is because the pH of the oceans is decreasing due to carbon dioxide, it's actually dissolving those corals, and there are major concerns about what's going to happen to reefs and reef habitat in the oceans.
One of the keys being investigated by scientists at large to sequestering CO2 is wetlands, both natural and man-made, which act as excellent net carbon sinks. Thad Scott and his colleague Byron Winston expect to publish the results of their preliminary research on Beaver Reservoir over the next several months and will continue on with this research through the winter. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The Association of Metropolitan Water Agencies honored Beaver Water District, based in Lowell, with a 2013 AMWA Gold Award for exceptional utility performance during ceremonies held on October 28th at its annual meeting in St. Petersburg, Florida.
On the next Fresh Air, Allie Brosh talks about her autobiographical blog, Hyperbole and a Half. She describes it as stand-up comedy with drawings. But her most popular posts were about the depression that left her emotionally numb.
I would sort of have to consciously control my facial expressions because I wasn't feeling enough organic emotion to generate them naturally.
Join us.
Fresh Air begins this evening at 6 on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. All sorts of people armed with ideas may be able to convert those ideas into something more. During the 54 hours of the Startup Weekend, Northwest Arkansas takes place beginning Friday night at the space called The Iceberg in Fayetteville, just off Dixon Street. Veteran entrepreneurs and novices alike are invited to the weekend that's part of a global exercise. The co-organizers of the Northwest Arkansas version are Jordan Carlisle and Max Farrell, friends who grew up together in Little Rock and have attended several startup weekends together around the country. Max now lives in Des Moines, where he's working with a startup, and Jordan lives in Fayetteville. They recently talked to me about this upcoming startup weekend that begins Friday night at 6:30. They also talked about what they've learned from other such startup weekends they've participated in together.
The first one was definitely a blur. Went into it thinking it was going to be more of a business conference, much more of consuming content rather than actually creating something. And honestly, I got thrown into this tech world that I knew nothing about when it came to, you know, software development and the whole nine yards when it comes to building a web company or any type of technology startup for that matter. And I won't say that I, you know, was able to use any of that technology stuff that I learned over the weekend, but I became familiar with it and it gave me enough to latch onto something and inspired me to learn more. And so I would say it was definitely a blur, but I came out of it so curious about what it is to build something online, build a startup company from the ground up, something small that could scale into something big, and also realize that I could do it in the middle of the United States. I didn't have to be on, you know, in Silicon Valley or New York or Chicago. And that really fascinated me.
Who would you prescribe is ready for a startup weekend? What do you have to bring to make sure that you're going to benefit out of it?
You have to bring yourself, Kyle. We look forward to seeing you there.
but I mean, do you have to have some sort of business plan ready to go, or is curiosity enough?
We like to say that curiosity is enough, and definitely an open mind. Because you may come with an idea, and anybody can pitch their idea if they're signed up, and you may find out that your idea wasn't one of the popular ones that gets picked to move on through the process. So having that open mind to join another team is important because, like I mentioned, your idea might not get picked. But that being said, you don't have to have an idea at all. You can come just to work on something creative or just to come and learn and see what it's about.
So in other words, I don't have to come thinking that, okay, on Sunday evening I'm going to walk away with the company that is going to be my life's work for the rest of my working days.
We hope it would be, but it might not.
Do you ever find people are a little bit, I guess they wouldn't show up to a startup weekend if they are hesitant to share ideas, but is there ever concern like, oh, I've got this great idea, and I'm announcing it to other people, and 6 months later I see this person has incorporated my idea?
Definitely. That is one of the more frequently asked questions. And honestly, it is something that you have to go into with kind of your own sense about it. We do make sure to bring on a part of our sponsorship package for in-kind prizes, legal consulting. So those teams that do have the more validated ideas by the end of the weekend will have the opportunity to sit down with a lawyer and make sure that they are properly protected and everything.
So you can perhaps protect to some degree your intellectual property?
Yes.
Names?
Correct. Or equity, you know, how that kind of forms over the weekend is an interesting one. And then also making sure that they're not violating anyone else's intellectual property.
Would it be appropriate to say you might have a great idea, but you're not as tech savvy as you want to be, you're not as engineer savvy, and you're looking perhaps for that intellect that can help you? And you
definitely
might find it here?
Definitely. It's Startup Weekend shows you quickly that teamwork makes the dream work, is that we can sit on an idea for 5 years. You can even, you know, register a website domain for this idea, but the idea is still worth $0 until you actually execute on it and build something. And so that's where we say, no talk, all action, just shut up and build at Startup Weekend, because that's what you're there for, is to take that idea to the next level, get people passionate about what you're working on, or, you know, it's sink or swim. Learn that there's 5,000 different widgets out there that are already in the same competitive space as you, and that you need to pivot to something else. So it's definitely a place that will rock your world, you know, both mentally and also from what your personal ideas and beliefs are.
There was a Startup Weekend within this calendar year in Little Rock, correct?
That is correct.
Were you both there?
We were both the lead organizers.
What was that like?
It was amazing, honestly.
Yes.
Coming from two people who are very passionate about an event as participants, organizing this event over 4 months and then hoping to God that there are other people out there that will enjoy the same experience, and then having these people show up and be blown away after 54 hours and getting feedback, all this positive feedback from people, honestly, just really inspiring to me. I mean, it really just that's why we're doing it up here, is because we're, you know, it just drives us when we see that feedback and we see the people come back and say, we learned so much and we didn't realize that, you know, people can start companies. And to even validate that even further, there were two teams out of Little Rock Startup Weekend that that gained seed investment 2 weeks after the event, I think. Both of them went into the ARC Challenge, which is the local accelerator program in conjunction with Innovate Arkansas and the university. And those people never would have thought that they would have gone on that journey to start a company and to go through an accelerator program and to potentially have a viable business, you know, before that weekend. So
they were, had they not, safe to say, had they not had that 54 hours of experience of startup in Little Rock, they probably wouldn't have advanced as far as they have at this point?
For one of the companies, I can it's very safe to share that, because the two co-founders didn't even know each other, and they wouldn't have met each other.
Wait, they did not know each other when the weekend started?
Had no clue. And honestly, they were almost even hesitant to work together. It was pretty interesting. And then they ended up hitting it off really well, and I think they came in second. And had one of the most liked applications that out of the whole event. So
this is like speed dating. You don't know a person, and then suddenly you're connected. I mean, you've got a partnership.
That's one of the biggest things that we've loved about the Startup Weekend is that we all make contacts at wherever we go. But to be able to do it in a place like Arkansas that has all these people that have that common ground is that we are Arkansans, build from that and then create this feedback loop where there's people that are constantly checking in every week just to see what's going on. And so these strangers became friends and buddies and co-founders. So it was the perfect mix.
Okay, so say you win the Startup Weekend. So Sunday evening, November 17th, you've been declared the winner. What happens?
We give you a high five.
No, you're going to – first off, you're going to be on this euphoric high coming out of it, and you're going to be kind of in la-la land and thinking probably, big things. And then you're going to wake up the next day and you're going to be like, holy hell, I am so tired.
and I'm going to work.
and I have a real job. We make sure and check back with those teams pretty quickly. And we encourage them almost forcefully, but we really want to make sure that they follow up with the sponsorship prizes that they're offered. So the design consulting, the tech consulting, the legal consulting, we try and make sure they execute on that. One, because those sponsors do enjoy doing that and they want to provide that value and they look forward to it. But also we don't want them to lose sight of that dream that they saw in this kind of tunneled experience.
Jordan Carlisle lives in Fayetteville and talked to me from inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Max Farrell lives in Des Moines and joined us by phone. They are co-organizers of this week's Startup Weekend Northwest Arkansas, to be held from Friday night until Sunday night at the Iceberg, a co-working space in Fayetteville that's located just off of Dixon Street. For more information about schedules and details, you can go to the website northwestarkansas.startupweekend.org. It is Tuesday, 11-12-13. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
May I digress for a moment?
Always.
We haven't even started, so
I'm not
sure
what
need to
digress yet.
Right.
Today is my beautiful child's birthday.
Happy birthday, Amanda.
So on 11-12-13, we're going to have to pick an age she's turning because 25 is unacceptable.
It's a good age.
It's unacceptable. Anyway, everybody, sing happy birthday to Amanda, or go see some visual art.
Where can you do that?
You can go to an artist reception for an exhibit called I Mind Hand Heart, an exhibition of faculty work from the UAFS Art and Graphic Design Department that happens at 5 o'clock tomorrow.
Okay.
At UAFS at 2nd Street, which they just renamed.
The Blue Lion.
Yes. 788-7431 for information. You can go see the Ozark Pastel Society's Fall Show Memories, which opens Thursday at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. That is assuming that they've pried the last of the 5x5 shoppers out of ACO.
Right.
There's a reception from 1 to 3 on Saturday to honor the artists. And Thursday night is also Art Night Out at Crystal Bridges, which I believe you know a little something about.
I am hosting, yes. I'm looking forward to it.
I swear you have become the Zeke Taylor of of the media world.
Yes, Zeke and I cannot actually be in the same place at the same time. It's like the president and vice president.
I see. No. Okay, this is themed Show of the Century, and it celebrates, of course, the Georgia O'Keeffe and the Alfred Stieglitz Collection exhibit that's just opening. It happens at 7:30 Thursday. Tickets are $50. You get dinner.
Yes, you do.
You get all of or part of Picasso at the Lapita Gil.
Part of it.
Okay.
Jason Sewell is the mad genius behind that.
Of course he is, because that man never sleeps.
Right.
A modern dance exhibit inspired by Rite of Spring.
I know a little bit about this. I think people are going to be really wowed by this.
Okay. And music by the Hogtown Hot Club.
Who are fantastic.
That's a lot for $50.
Yes.
So you should go on the internet and check out crystalbridges.org and make a reservation.
Absolutely.
And you can get to see Kyle in one place.
Yes.
And I guess Zeke won't be there.
I don't know. Maybe he will. We'll have to find out.
And the world will implode.
Yeah. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The Symphony of Northwest Arkansas's debut concert of the season includes Beethoven's Fifth Piano Concerto.
It's this sense of complete relaxation. It's not without tension at all. I mean, there's this sense of line that draws you through it. You know, it's beautiful and it's relaxed, but there's always this sense of you're not quite there.
Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen. Join me for Wednesdays of Note from 11 to noon for more from that conversation, plus Beethoven's Fifth Piano Concerto.
And later on this edition of Ozarks at Large, a new art exhibit in Fayetteville puts street art in Beirut in focus, and the staff at the Community Creative Center wants you to try your own hand at creating art. And speaking of art, yesterday, on the second anniversary of the opening of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, the museum announced a new initiative for 2014. Crystal Bridges President Don Bacigalupi and Assistant Curator for Special Projects Chad Alligood have been traveling across the country. They visited over 400 artists' studios from coast to coast. These artists and their work will form the core of a new exhibition, State of the Art, that will debut at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art on September 13, 2014. That exhibit will feature works by more than 100 artists selected from the team's extensive research and travels. The exhibition goes up in September and will be on view at the Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville through January 5th of 2015.
The national presentation of the Burlsworth Trophy will be Monday, December 9th at the Holiday Inn Convention Center in Springdale. The award will be given to the most outstanding NCAA Division I football player in 2013, who began his career as a walk-on. The event is hosted by the Rotary Club of Springdale. The Burlsworth Trophy honors the memory of Brandon Burlsworth, who played football at the University of Arkansas. When he arrived on the Arkansas campus in 1994, he had no Division I scholarship offers. He not only earned a scholarship, but became team captain, All-SEC in 1997 to 1998, first-team All-SEC in 1998, Football News first-team All-American in 1998, and the first All-American from the University of Arkansas in a decade. He was also named to the All-SEC Academic Honor Roll every year from 1995 to 1998, and he was the first football player in the history of the U of A to earn a master's degree before playing his last game. Brandon was selected by the Indianapolis Colts as the 63rd overall pick in the 1999 NFL draft, but died in an automobile accident just 11 days later. In 2010, the Burlsworth Award was created to honor the achievements and successes of walk-on athletes. It's presented annually to the most outstanding NCAA football player who began his career as a walk-on. The luncheon event is open to the public and begins at 11:30 a.m. Tickets are $50 and are available at burlsworthtrophy.com.
And one more sports-related note. You go to the Northwest Arkansas Natural Games on occasion, do you not?
I do.
Well, you saw, I'm betting, because you've been in the last couple of years.
I have.
Yes, you saw that Will Myers.
Yes.
Well, he, a former Northwest Arkansas Natural, has been named the American League Rookie of the Year. He played parts of the 2011 and 2012 seasons in Springdale before he was traded to the Tampa Bay's organization before the beginning of the last Major League Baseball season. He was called up in the middle of the year, and he was named yesterday the American League Rookie of the Year.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
In about 7 minutes on Ozarks at Large, images of Lebanon. Antoinette talks to Jamie Holland about her new exhibit of photographs from Beirut, plus a checklist of other opportunities to see visual arts in the region over the next few weeks. But before that, a gentle nudge for you to create your own art.
It's a great opportunity to, first of all, to make new friends.
Joy Price is the Education Program Manager at the Community Creative Center in Fayetteville. The center hosts art classes after school for children, but also art classes for adults. Joy Price says those classes allow adults to do more than just make friends.
To be a part of the creative community that we have here, to experience a joy in making that perhaps they have never felt before. And we have the most amazing studios that people are blown away when they see the facility that we have here. It's just a wonderful place to get away from the stress of everyday life and to come and kind of let yourself go a little bit.
The Community Creative Center is at Nadine Baum Studios, about a block off of Dixon Street. One afternoon last week, Joy Price and Barbara Putman, the executive director of the Creative Community Center, extolled the benefits of creating just for the sake of creating.
We're in the lobby here, and we can see some of the kids coming down from their Crazy for Art class. In here is our Reinbach studio.
That studio has more than a dozen pottery wheels and plenty of space for creative adventures. The center is open 6 days a week, and most afternoons you can find at least a couple of youth classes, from a $20 class that will help children 7 and up build a collage resembling a lion, to a class that allows young artists to draw inspiration from great masters to create their own Renoir or Van Gogh-inspired works. But Joy Price and Barbara Putman say they also want adults, people who may not have put their hands in clay or picked up a paintbrush for years, if ever, to give the artistic process some time. Barbara says people participating in the adult classes have been amazed at what creating art can do for the body and the mind.
That's absolutely correct. They're just here to feed their artistic urges, their artistic, creative desires, and we have what we call Open Studio, which is mainly our pottery studio, and we have students of all ages, adults, but women and men who come down and just take their time. Friday evenings come down, and they have their own clay, they have a little locker, they have their own glazes, and they just create amazing things, and just because they want to.
The adult classes include a Tuesday evening pottery class, figure drawing sessions taught by Sean Fitzgibbon, and this Thursday night, a whimsical gathering for people, including beginners, who want to create a sculpture of their favorite canine. Joy Price promises everybody enrolled can walk away with a piece of art.
The whole project is based around rolling coils. So if you can roll a coil from clay, you can make one of these dogs. And you can really create this dog to be the character of your own dog, so it can have big, long, floppy ears or pointy ears, or, you know, you can adapt it. It's fun.
Joy says the cool little secret about a group art class is that it's fun.
I like the adult conversation that you have while everybody is enjoying the creative process, and people relax after a while, and they just realize that it is fun. You know, this is fun, and it doesn't have to be perfect. In fact, I think the best art is very unintentional, so that's our philosophy.
The Community Creative Center has also created a partnership with the Washington Regional Cancer Support Home to establish a therapeutic project called Clay for Cancer.
It's one of those things that other people have recognized, that they've got money from the Arkansas Arts Council, and it's the healing power of arts. And we have cancer patients, their caregivers, their family members are all welcome to come down free of charge. And we have a series of classes that we're going to offer. We actually have a mosaics class going on and a clay class going on right now. And like, it's pretty much every month that we'll do through the rest, I guess, until June. And it's one of those things where, you know, you don't have to have cancer to come in and participate, but it's recognized this opportunity to use your hands and to not think about what's going on in the rest of your life, but just become immersed in the art.
The Community Creative Center is located in the Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville and is open 6 days a week. You can see a schedule of their classes at their website, communitycreative.org. And while much of the art created inside the studios does leave the building, not all of it does. On Saturday, December 6th, the center will host its annual holiday bazaar at the center from 10 until 4, with proceeds directed toward the center's community scholarship fund. This is Ozarks at Large.
Coming up on Tech Nation, it's Clive Thompson, a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine and the author of Smarter Than You Think: How Technology is Changing Our Minds for the Better. Then on Biotech Nation, Takeda's Dr. Rajeev Venkaya tells us about its work with Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, telling us how zip code shouldn't define access to healthcare. Then on Bio Issue of the Week with David Ewing Duncan, the top innovations of 2013 from the Cleveland Clinic. All this coming up on this week's Tech Nation.
Tune in for Tech Nation this evening beginning at 6, after Ozarks at Large at 5 on KUAF 3, our digital news and information signal. You can listen at our website, KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
As Becca Martin Brown mentioned earlier in our program, there are lots of places to view art this month, including Arcega's at the Depot, which is presenting Beneath the Surface, an exhibit featuring recent works by John Rankin. Just east along Dixon Street, the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery inside the Walton Arts Center has become the site of Linking the Past to the Present, recent works by Anita Fields and Tony Tiger. And on the square, the Fayetteville Underground is featuring the retro futurism of Oklahoma artist Robert Shin, as well as member artist Jan Gosnell's newest body of work, The Palette as Subject.
There are some art events of interest taking place up the hill at the University of Arkansas this month. Resonance, Audible Silence, and Portraiture is on display now through December 4th in the UA Fine Arts Center Gallery. The exhibit is described as a visceral portrait of devotion and beauty that challenges viewers to confront the deepest of human emotions that reside within the panorama of mortality. A reception is scheduled for 5 o'clock Thursday evening, and that will be followed at 6 with a lecture in Giffel's Auditorium by Petta Coyne, one of the artists whose work is on display.
An Odyssey of Dreams, a Decade of Paintings, 2003-2012, will be on display through December 6 at the Ann Kittrell Gallery inside the Student Union on the University of Arkansas campus. This traveling exhibition will feature the latest body of work by internationally renowned British artist Basil Alkazi.
Hunter G. Connor will be the featured artist at the Press Room in Bentonville during the month of November. An artist reception is scheduled for 6 to 8 p.m. Monday, November 18th. The 16-year-old's exhibition is curated by the Norberta Philbrook Gallery, who is also hosting a reception from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Saturday, November 23rd, for painter Paula Jones.
In Siloam Springs, the Wingate Visual Arts West Gallery on the John Brown University campus is the site of Champion Trees of Arkansas, Artist Journey. The exhibition features the work of color pencil artist Linda Palmer.
Beirut Speaks is another new exhibition that opened last week. The photography exhibit is on display at Coco's Lebanese Cafe in Fayetteville, and it was created by Jamie Holland. The University of Arkansas student who grew up in Helena and earned a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in graphic design from Arkansas State University is now working on a master's degree in cultural anthropology with a focus on Middle Eastern studies. Earlier this summer, she was able to spend about 6 weeks in Beirut, Lebanon, to study a unique form of street art.
There is one photo of this huge wall in Carantina in Beirut, and it says Beirut Teki, which means Beirut speaks. But before that, it was in 2007 when, after like a series of bad things started to happen and the invasion, a street artist named Fish with a Lebanese filmmaker called Siska wrote on this huge wall. It said Beirut in Tekin, which means if Beirut could speak. And then, like, 7 years later, you know, this graffiti movement is just really getting bigger and bigger. And so Fish went back and wrote Beirut Speaks over that wall. So I thought that was really inspiring and really cool.
The specific kind of street art Holland is studying is known as calligraphy. It combines graffiti with Arabic letters and Arabic calligraphy. During her trip, she was able to interview different artists, and through her research, Holland says she discovered that in Lebanon, they don't understand the concept of tagging and graffiti art as we know it in the United States. She says these street artists began writing in Arabic and using calligraphy because it presented more of a challenge to them, and also because it can be read by all Lebanese citizens, who Holland says grow up speaking Arabic, French, and English. She says in talking to people, she found this theme of an identity crisis, perhaps because the Mediterranean country has been influenced by a variety of cultures. However, the street artists feel Arabic is their heritage, and they really want to make a claim to that.
And also, they know very well that the politics in Lebanon aren't that great. It's very divided with sectarian discord and struggles. And so they decided, because their messages can be read, they wanted to try to empower their citizens by writing messages that say things about their country, you know, and sometimes, more often than not, the messages are very, they have a lot of satire and humor in them. It's not really meant to, you know, save Lebanon. They're not trying to make Lebanon secular, because they know that that's a ginormous task that they cannot do. But they know that they can empower their citizens by, you know, asking a question with their messages, not necessarily pointing to an alternative or finding an answer for the sectarian discord, but they can tell their citizens through their work that, you know, they do have a choice in the political, social atmosphere.
Holland says they are embellishing their country by taking calligraphy, which is so artistic, traditional, and embedded in their society, and mixing it with graffiti. Holland also says she found the artists are influencing young audiences in a positive way.
One of the more prominent graffiti crews, they're called Ashik Mon in Lebanon. They studied graphic design in college, and then they worked for advertising companies, and then they decided to use their work. And so now they do an urban wear shop where they have T-shirts and hats and things like that. They also do a lot of work for art nonprofits and things like that. And they call this old school meets new school. So they're taking the old school calligraphy and applying it to the new school graffiti. And they feel like they're doing a lot of good with it. And I really think that they are, because a younger generation sees this and they look at the Arabic words on the graffiti and they can read it. And, you know, they feel that Arabic is becoming cool again in a society where it wasn't as cool. And so now a younger generation wants to kind of mimic the Arabic graffiti because, you know, it's what they speak. It's what they grow up learning to speak. And rather than, like, mimic other forms of graffiti that aren't really that don't really apply to Lebanon.
Holland says during the Lebanese Civil War, which lasted from 1975 to 1990, political parties would stencil their logos all around the city, which would often divide the city along sectarian lines. Following the Israeli invasion in 2006, she says the government banned graffiti that has any kind of political message. It's about this time that these types of street artists began to emerge. She says similar to street artists in the U.S., street artists in Beirut have a limited amount of time before the police arrive. However, Holland says when compared to artists in, say, New York City, street artists in Beirut have a much longer time to work on their pieces.
It's funny. It's legal, but it's illegal, excuse me, but it's tolerated. And so some of my friends actually did get caught by the cops, but more often than not, they could talk their way out of it. And then sometimes the cops would look at the work and be like, oh, that's cool. Can you paint my portrait? And so it's funny how it worked out for them. And so and also the people really like it, too. Some businesses with nice walls will ask some of the artists, you know, can you paint something on this? And so they really are embellishing the city for the good with this. And so I think that the government and the police are really starting to like this kind of street art. And so that they're a little bit more lenient with it rather than tagging that we're commonly used to being associated with being a gangster and stuff like that.
In addition to the street art, the exhibition also features photos of the city and of the Roman ruins in Baalbek, Lebanon. Holland plans to return to Lebanon in May. She says there is a lot of research that's fascinating, but it doesn't always get talked about. So this exhibit is a good way to share the story of these Lebanese street artists whom she learned about through her research.
I just hope that people will be inspired and just really try to understand, you know, try to, like, break things down, you know, rather than just seeing a pretty picture, but understanding the story behind the picture as well, and maybe move forward with that.
Beirut Speaks is on display now at Coco's Lebanese Cafe in Fayetteville. The exhibit is free and open to the public. Professionally mounted prints of the photographs are available for sale. More information is available by emailing jamie.alyss@gmail.com. This is Ozarks at Large. KUAF is supported by Arcom Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville. Arcom Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. ArcomPrinting.com or 444-7711.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Blue Eye. I want to remind everyone that Thursday night at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville, I will be one of the hosts of the latest Art Night Out that will include all sorts of things.
What is the theme this time? I went to the one last November that you hosted, and that was a lot of fun. They had music from the old 78s, and there was, I think, the Fayetteville Jazz Collective was playing music, and there was dancing, and it was a good time. So I imagine it's something in that vein.
It is. There will be dance. Both participatory and observatory.
Participatory is my favorite.
Yes. There will also be Jason Sewell is behind a bit of a dramatic
performance
that we'll see, which should be fun. And visiting artists, a lot of fun. That'll be Thursday night at Crystal Bridges Museum of Art. You can learn much more at their website.
But tomorrow you're hosting something too.
Yes, at the
end. We'll start tomorrow. And
okay.
Keep your schedule straight here.
Okay. Tomorrow in the middle of the day, while you and Christina are hosting Ozarks at Large, mm-hmm. I will be at the Northwest Arkansas Observance of National Philanthropic Day.
Oh, very cool.
That's going to take place at the Embassy Suites in Rogers. The annual awards are given out by the Northwest Arkansas chapter of the Association of Fundraising Professionals.
And
very
so cool.
That's tomorrow. In Rogers, then
Thursday
night in Bentonville at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art.
Okay. Yes. You have anything Friday or Saturday?
I'm opening for Shecky Green at the Sands.
Oh, good.
Did that go right over your head? That's an old Johnny Carson reference.
Okay.
Yes. No. No. I think I'm done after that.
Okay. Good to know.
Speaking of philanthropy,
yes,
that's one of the subjects on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Yes. You talked to
Allison McElroy, who is with the local chapter of AFP, about three things we should know about philanthropy.
Right. Continuing our monthly series of three things you should know about.
Fill in the blank.
Fill in the blank. This month, philanthropy.
That's right. It is National Philanthropic Month.
Yes.
All over the place.
Hence why the film, yes. Philanthropy. We'll also have a story about Siloam Springs Farmers Market, which is starting an online market for the winter.
Yeah, online. So you look online at what's available.
Right.
And then
you can buy it.
But how does it get to you? Well, I guess I'll find
that
out tomorrow.
You need to listen to the story for the details. Don't give it all away now.
I'm right, obviously. And Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas, sits down with a panel to discuss the problems associated with the rollout of the Affordable Care Act.
Yes, specifically the website healthcare.gov right. And fixing that and what that means and that sort of thing. Something we've all been talking about for a while.
Yes. And probably will continue to talk about
probably
for some time.
Will for a little bit, yes.
So that's all on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Yes, tomorrow at noon or again at 7.
And that tomorrow's show. Oh, and also on HD3 at
right,
5.
At 5, yes. HD3, we are changing up some of the scheduling there, so you can look forward to different programs.
Right. Diane Rehm is back on the schedule.
Right.
Fresh Air, the 11 a.m. version of Fresh Air, will soon be added to the HD3 schedule. Ozarks at Large is there at 5. And a different science-related public radio program follows Ozarks at Large every day at 6. More shows to be added to the HD3 schedule, which you can listen to on an HD radio or online.
At KUAF.com.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening. Antoinette will be with Christina tomorrow for another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large.
Yes. Have a happy Tuesday and try to stay warm.
Oh, yeah. Good luck.
Thanks, guys.